Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Premier View Tipperary GAA podcast has just got its very first sponsor. The podcast is now proudly sponsored by MerchMonster.ie. On MerchMonster.ie, you can buy personalised hoodies, t-shirts, polo shirts, personalised snood face coverings, and a whole lot more. They've even got a product personaliser over on their website. Go over there and check it out now. They deal in one-off orders and also in bulk orders, class hoodies, T-Man work polo shirts, and everything else in between. Go over there and check them out now. It's merchmonster.ie. Now let's get back to this week's show.
Hello and welcome to episode 43 of the Premier View Tipperary GAA podcast. Today's episode has an interview with Cathal Macarlane of fantasyhurling.ie and John O'Shea of John Mitchell's and Warwickshire GAA in the UK. But first, Marty.
Bring back Tomás Costello.
Looks for the return of a former All-Ireland winner to the Tip Colours as Marissa joins us to talk about the Galway game. Right, Tip got back to winning ways in the National Hurling League this weekend with a 5-point win over Galway. While the footballers had 3 points to spare over Wicklow. We go to the hurling first, and it was on first on Saturday. Marissa, before we get into the hurling, before the game, it came out that poor Al Bonner was after doing his Achilles and is out for the foreseeable, a terrible blow for Tip and for Bonner himself.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think there's much to be said that hasn't already been said about Bonner Maher. He's an absolute warrior. He has been for Tip for 13 years and for Lura for even longer. You know, Liam Sheedy spoke really well after the game, saying that, you know, he's set the pace for Tipperary. He has set how they train, what their attitude is like. He's the fittest man of the panel, he said. So it's a huge blow, not just for Bonner himself, but for the team. You know, Liam said they wanted to go out there and they wanted to play for him, and it just shows how well regarded he is by his peers. And you know, there was nothing but sympathy for Bonner online and from fans as well. And also this notion that if any fella can come back, it's Bonner Maher. He's 31, but as Liam said, he's fittest man on the field. And if anyone is going to be motivated to overcome this, it's Bonner Maher.
Yeah. Marty, as Marissa said there, he's kind of a talisman for Tip, and he sets the tone. He was a big loss for us any year that he's been out. And I suppose with the game that Limerick play especially, he would have been a guy that would lay down a marker against them with his work rate.
I think so. His work rate and physicality would... Even the likes of Limerick and Galway, they're definitely teams that... you benefit from having Bonner on the field for. I mean, you benefit any day he's on the field, but those teams in particular, it's an awful pity, especially after 2019, because I think he was going very well that year and he did the cruciate. Now, you know, he's gone again for another year. So especially at the end of his career, because he has given so much to Tipperary. And if we do win stuff, you want him to be there in the field, you know? Because I think even Brian Cody once admitted that if you could have any Tipperary hurler, it would be Bonner Maher. It's probably as much praise now as anybody will get from Brian Cody. So
any tip man,
I think it speaks a lot, because we've a lot of skillful, flashy hurlers, but at the end of the day, Bonner is kind of the heart and soul of that team. So hopefully it'll push the rest of the lads on. And I mean, if yesterday's any indication, the lads aren't afraid to get down to work now without him. So,
yeah.
But yeah, sure. Look, hopefully the recovery will go quick for him anyway, and hopefully it isn't the last we've seen of him either.
Absolutely. Hopefully we'll see him again in the blue and gold. Just before throwing, then the another Lara man went down with an injury. Marissa, you must have caught the bug up there lately. But Brian was replaced by Barry in the goals. Before the game, a concussion, I believe, is what is being reported, I think.
Yeah, it was reported that he picked up a head injury during the week. Hopefully, he'll be fine. And we might, thankfully, there's a week's break now, and we might see him back for the Westmeath game. It'd be good for him just to get a run out before championship. I don't think there's any doubt that he has a fight in his hands now for the number one jersey. And you know, it'd be great for him to get one or two games under his belt before Liam Sheedy has to make that decision for championship.
Yeah, absolutely. Marty, I suppose Friday evening then the teams were named, and just before we get into the game itself, but a few surprises maybe on the tip team. Obviously, Brian Hogan was due to come back in. He was named at number one. Paddy was moved into the full back line instead of Brian McGrath. We had Robert Byrne was getting his first start in the half back line, with Seamus Kindy continuing in the number six role. And then a start for Dylan Quirk in the forwards. I suppose a bit of a surprise, but then maybe not so much a surprise considering Galway made 9 changes going into the game.
Yeah, well, I mean, trying things is one of the things a lot of people have been saying that they want to see Tip do during this league. I think probably the biggest shock for me was seeing Paddy named a 3. Now, I know he was there for a bit against Cork, but we've kind of had our issues with Paddy at fullback before. But I think the way a lot of oppositions are setting up at the moment, isolating the fullback, the full forward and the fullback and dropping high ball on top of him isn't the way the game is going at the moment. So Paddy might be a bit better suited. Aside from that, then to see the likes of Robert Byrne, Dylan Quirk get a go, I think everybody's a bit happy to see things like that, you know, new players in, new blood, even if they're not starters, come championship, they need the game time and the experience to come off the bench. Not a surprise to see Paddy Cadell get a start. I think the biggest surprise there was he hasn't started before now. He's a major, major prospect, and he definitely adds something to that midfield. So his fella, I wouldn't be surprised if we see him starting coming championship, but at the same time, there's a lot of players to pick from there, so it's kind of hard to know. But he'll have a part to play anyway, and it looks like he'll have a good one too.
Yeah. So Marissa, going on to the game there, obviously, we won the game by 5 points, but the first half was probably, I think, like all these games, they're probably broken down into quarters now, but it was kind of a nip and tuck affair. I thought we certainly dominated the first 15, 17 minutes of it. Paddy Cadell, I thought, was excellent in that first quarter, but probably didn't put it on the scoreboard, but got off to a great start, a super goal from Jason Ford.
Yeah, absolutely. Super goal. And as much credit has to go to Noel McGrath for that spectacular pass as it does, you know, Jason had a lot of work to do to finish it off. And I was looking back at it, it nearly went straight at the keeper. And you would have thought that if his body was positioned just slightly different, he might have been able to get the save away. But there was enough power behind, and I think the whole county kind of breathed a sigh of relief that we finally managed to put a ball in the back of the net after 3 games. But
I don't think anybody expected a Galway goalkeeper to make a save, so I think you're totally wrong there.
That's not, I am staying away from that. But yeah, you mentioned Paddy Cadell there. He had a storming first half. Like, he set up 2 unbelievable points for Bubbles and for Noel McGrath. Bubbles, I thought, was seriously impressive in that first quarter, especially, you know, he was really physical in the forward line, which is something we needed in that game, I think. And he was really impressive with his shot selection. And I think he got 2 from nearly identical shots out near the sideline. Really, really impressive from him. And so decent first half overall, probably quietened out in the second half. Paddy Cadell probably got caught in possession a few times. Loads of promise from him. Just a lot of learnings as well, I suppose, from that second half.
Yeah, Marty, we had 1-5 scored at the first water break and only finished the half with 2-7. So that second 15 minutes, we really struggled. Galway outscored us 8-1-2. We saw points in another trademark Bubbles point, as Marissa said, a lovely wristy score off the sideline. And Robert Byrne popped up with a point. And then we had Ford's goal there just before McGrath's goal from a forward pass there just before halftime. But we needed that goal, didn't we?
We did, but I think we kind of fell asleep after that goal. I think Galway might have scored 5 without reply between then and the half. So I a lot of that might have just been down to the intensity that we were playing up to then, and just a bit of fatigue, maybe. You know, it's very hard to keep that intensity going for the full 70 minutes. So I think we kind of got there. At the same time, Galway still went 20 minutes without getting a score from play. And I think a lot of that was down to just our work rate and our intensity. We probably started fouling a little bit too much and kept them in it. But it was kind of disappointing to kind of tail off after the goal and let them back into it, because we could have been more comfortable at half time, especially when you had that wind in the first half. And I don't know if it was as obvious on the match on telly looking at it, but it was very windy yesterday. Mm. I think the fact that Jason Ford and Joe Canning missed what might be considered handy freeze by their standards kind of is testament to that. So, just a small bit of fatigue maybe settling in after the high intensity. And I think that was right in the second half. You see, with our bench really made a difference. So,
yeah, that second quarter, probably Joe Kenning was the most influential player, I think, in that second quarter, especially from freeze. He was very good on the freeze, but that was probably as Cadell went out of the game, Kenning came into it a bit more. But what's Galway's thinking, do you think, Marty, there with Kenning in the middle of the field? Is it fitness, or will we see him there for the championship?
I think they've kind of always had a thing with Joe Canning. What can they do to get the most out of Joe Canning? Because he did start his career on the edge of the square, and he's gone further out the field the older he's gotten. A bit similar to Noel McGrath, maybe, who started in the corner, and we've seen him popping up in our half back line from time to time in the last few years. Maybe not named there, but he does show up. So I guess I think with them, it's just, can they get Joe Canning more involved in a creative role, spraying the ball and I suppose it's become a bit of a cliche, but the quarterback role at this stage. Because he hasn't been as influential on the scoreboard from play for a number of years, so maybe they're just trying to make use of his other talents rather than, you know.
Yeah.
I think that he did that really well yesterday. His distribution from midfield was really impressive into the forward line. And he managed to turn over Paddy Cadell there. Might have been a little bit of an experience from Cadell, but, you know, he was really physical in that midfield there at one stage of the game. So I think for them, it's more just to have another option. You know, David Burke is injured at the moment. He'll probably be fine for the next game. But it's always another option for them to have at midfield, because they're constantly chopping changing in that line. But I thought himself and Johnny Crone worked well together.
Yeah. Mihola Dunhu would have been part of the Tipperary, I suppose, backroom team back when Noel was moved out into the middle of the field. Do you think there's a bit of ape in the Tip mantra there, and seeing what Noel did when he went out there, that Joe could potentially do the same thing for Galway and set up attacks from that position?
I don't know, maybe if it's an ape and Tip kind of thing, but I think there's a couple of counties like that have that type of player, be it Noel McGrath or Joe Canning or Tony Kelly, and it's just trying to find the best position on the field to get the most out of them. And it doesn't necessarily mean them scoring 5 or 6 points from play. You know, it's their work rate and their vision maybe is more important. And Galway are trying it. Whether Joe Canning has the legs for that, you know, a lot of people are talking about Noel's age, but Joe's a few years on Noel too. Like, so I think when he went off and Brendan Marr came in, we just totally took over in the middle of the field again. So it's a big issue for Galway if they're going to play Joe there and they don't have a suitable replacement for the last quarter. It mightn't work out for them as well as they'd like, maybe.
Yeah. So moving on to the second half, Marissa, we saw Sheedy make two changes at halftime. John McGrath and Dylan went off, both of whom had been largely anonymous, I think, in the first half. So Sheedy wasn't showing any... He was ruthless there and taking him off. And then we saw more changes, I suppose, in the third quarter. But I think I described it in the match report as being absolutely dire. It's probably one of the worst 15 minutes of hurling I've seen in a long time.
To be honest, even the most diehard Tipperary fan would have been excused for nodding off a bit during. I think it was just so stop start. You know, when both teams are introducing seven stubs, you know, the whole game is broken up, and you know, taken to freeze then and place balls and all this kind of thing. It was difficult to watch. But two smart substitutions at halftime, as it turned out, as you said, John McGrath, Dylan Quirk, not contributing a huge amount. Dylan, it was great to see him get a start. He's proven himself to be worthy of a start, I think, but just couldn't bring the form on the day. John McGrath's been struggling for form for lately. And you know, but Paul Flynn and Isla Mara did really well when they came on. And I think it was the subs that really made the difference throughout the half. You know, you saw Michael Breen coming on in the 60-minute mark, and he made a huge difference. You know, Jake Morris for Dan McCormick as well came on a little bit earlier than that. You know, Jake probably needs game time to prove himself. You know, he had a starting position last year. I don't know if you can guarantee that this year. So he needs that time to kind of show what he can do.
Yeah. Marty, we had 13 wides. I suppose wides is something that we've been speaking about. We didn't have 13, but there was 13 wides in that spell. Both teams couldn't seem to hit a barn door. I think it was 4 points each after the 15 minutes, but I think we hit about six or seven wides and they hit another six or seven. But it was just real bad, wasn't it?
Yeah, I remember during the match asking you for the stats, and it was some stage during the second half. It wasn't that late into the second half, and you said we'd 15 wides, and I think that's what we finished on in the end.
Yeah, it was 15-4.
So and I think it did end up something like 15-14.
15 each, I think.
15, you know, so yeah. Galway, 15 each. So, so I don't know. I mean, it says maybe that goals that they were both shooting into, obviously, it might have been the wind. When we had most of our wides in the first half, and they had most of our wides in the second half, so you know that one goal is, it might have been the same, you know, the same issue. But some of the shot selection was poor, particularly in the first half. I love Dan McCormick, but God, he needs to stop shooting from distance. Like, you know, it's okay, Dan. You can let it in around the square or something. Don't have to get in the score sheet. But at the same time, I mean, you had great long range points from Barry Heffernan and Robert Byrne in the early half too, and Ronan popped up with a few then later on as well. So
I'd love to see Ronan Maher's success rate, like in percentages, from the amount he tries versus the, like, they're always sensational points, but for every point there always seems to be at least two or three wides.
Yeah,
I haven't him down for any wides yesterday now, but yeah, I'd say his percentage rate isn't that bad at all. Actually, I think it might be better than some other halfbacks in the country. I know
some forwards even too.
Some forwards maybe, but Dermot Burns of Limerick would drive me mad if he was hurling for Tip, because he seems to have four or five long range wides every game. But for the highlight reels afterwards, only get the amazing ones anyway. But Paddy, I think, might be a bit more guilty of the long range wides.
Yeah, so we mentioned the subs there coming in, and Michael Breen, who is so, I suppose, look, is inconsistent, and I think that's he's such a talent, and when he's on song, as we saw last year, he can be a driving force. And then you're the next day you're tearing your hair out because he's either missing or he's anonymous in the game. But he came in and he scored. I think I would consider him two brilliant points. Plucked him out, one straight from a puck out, another from a long ball in and over the bar. He made a big impact, Marissa.
Yeah, he absolutely did. And what he brings most, I think, is physicality. And I think that's something we will desperately need with Bonner out. So I don't know if you have much choice but to try him out. I think he'll definitely start against Swiss Mead. That, and, you know, with no disrespect, I don't know how much of a test that will be, but we'll see. But yeah, two great points. And like he only came on in I think it was the 60th minute or something. Yeah. So, you know, we had 10 scorers overall, and how many of them were, I think there was 1, 2, 3, you know, 4 of them were our subs. So it kind of showed the impact of the bench as much yesterday, you know?
Yeah, Marty Brendan came on and he got quite an important score at the time. And considering, I suppose, the week before he was just on and he missed a point, a score that would have been important, but this time he got it and it was straight over the bar. That, obviously, the extra week of training is means that when he's coming on, he's that bit sharper.
Yeah, and the influence he had in the game, point aside, I think we took over in midfield again when he came on. I think, I mean, Brendan Maher is going to be starting come championship. We know that. Could be interesting whether he'll end up back in the midfield again, maybe, since that's where he came on yesterday. You know, with Bonner out, to be a few changes and things moved around, and I think we seem to be getting really strong in the half back line. He probably not much talked about him, but Seamus Kennedy was, I thought he was superb yesterday. I think he's nailed down the number 6 jersey now at this stage, and I can't see him being dislodged if he's as hurling the way he is. He went off late yesterday. Brian McGrath replaced him, but the game was over at that stage.
So, Marissa, yeah, finishing up, we pulled away, but there was a sending off there, I suppose, just before, about 7 or 8 minutes to go, an off-the-ball incident. Jarlett Mannion got the road. Cathal Barrett was on the deck. I didn't think you could really see it from the replays, but it had a big bearing on the result, I suppose. Similar to Barrett getting sent off last year in the championship, this meant that we probably pushed on and scored the last 4 points, I think, without reply. Galway were out on their feet.
Yeah, I mean, TG Cahir obviously found it hard to pick up. It was a couple of minutes later by the time they had the replay up, and it didn't show too much. I don't know if it had as major an impact on the result as people are saying. Obviously, going down to 14 is never an ideal situation, but by that stage, our subs were on, they were making the impact, and I think they had a far bigger say in the results than the sending off. You know, we had edged ahead. So it was an off the ball incident with Cathal Barrett, and Barrett ended up on the ground. What it was for her, I didn't see myself, but you know, the umpires seemed to be the ones that made the call. So it was, you know, we'll have to trust their eyes.
Yeah,
I think Jamie Wall was, no, my Irish wouldn't be exemplary by any manner of means, but I think from what I can gather, Jamie Wall was kind of saying that he saw it because he was up that end of the field, and he says, yeah, it was fair enough. Like, it wasn't anything real malicious, but yeah, he had to go for it, like, so.
Yeah, and I suppose, does that show, one, the maturity that Barrett has now that he didn't react back? And then that bit of experience, you know, play the soldier, hit the deck, and your man gets sent off.
I think the difference in attitude between Barrett between this year and last year is night and day. I think he has seemed to have copped on a small bit, because in fairness, at the end of the day, I think he's the best cornerback in the country himself and Finn of Galway or of Limerick. And if he just lets his hurling do the talking, you know, that's all he needs to do. So thankfully, the last 3 games, I think he got man of the match yesterday, and he's probably been our standout player in the league so far. He's just putting his head down, going about his business, and that's all he needs to do, really.
Yeah. So
back of that, I think we should also mention our other cornerback in Barry Heffernan. I thought he was fantastic yesterday. Connor Whelan was nearly non-existent in the game. You know, he did
Barry has really. I mean, look, even back as far as 2016, Barry was really showing impressive, you know, he was very impressive in the league, and he got a couple of bad concussions, and he kind of drifted in and out of the team for a while there, but he's another lad now I can't see not starting come championship. He's very solid, very dependable, and got a nice point there as well yesterday. So
yeah, yeah, I think alongside Cathal Barrett, he's our most consistent player at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I think coming into this, I suppose we all knew that Barrett was going to start at number two and we were missing a four, but Barry Heffernan certainly has that number four short nailed now. I think we're in a good place there in the fullback, and they've been our most consistent line, I think.
And it lets Ronan out into the half-back line as well, which is where we get the best out of Ronan, I think.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's something we've been talking about here for a long time, is how to get the best out of Ronan, and that he needed to be let out into that half-back line. And I think Ronan is our best player defensively. I think he's up there with the best hurlers in the country. And I mean, as you said, Marty, Seamus Kennedy has been such a revelation. He's an old style defender, isn't he? You know, he just does the simple.
He doesn't do anything fancy.
Yeah.
No, he just he does what he's asked to do, and since the 2019 final, he's been very consistent, very dependable. I think we were in hard luck. He got injured last year before the championship, and you know, that was disappointing, and it cost us, I think. But thankfully, he's back in there now, and he's back to where he was. So,
yeah, and Marissa would say Paddy obviously played fullback yesterday and was very comfortable there. Looked to be very comfortable there. We had Brian McGrath probably playing, maybe certainly a game and three quarters at fullback leading into this. And I thought he was very good there against Cork at fullback. I was actually disappointed that he wasn't there again yesterday. I'd like to have seen him get another shot at it. But then we also had Robert Bourne come in at wingback, and I thought he was very, very steady for a guy making, and I'm sure there were a lot of nerves there making his first start. I thought he was very steady, very dependable, strong, and gave away a couple of frees, but I mean, no more than anyone else, I thought.
Yeah, I was really impressed with him. As you said, like, it's never going to be easy making your first start, especially against a team like Galway. But I think he win one of the opening frees the game, you know, scored a point as well. And, you know, he was solid enough, filtered out. But again, that's nearly to be expected, you know, with that kind of game. So really impressed with him.
Yeah, Marty. And then in the middle of the field, we was obviously Cadell played well. With Brendan Maher coming back in, we spoke about Michael Breen. Noel was there again. Obviously, Noel is just an architect. Probably played a bit in centre forward as well yesterday. Alan Flynn is kind of in and out there. We'll probably need to settle on a midfield partnership, do we?
I think we probably do. All right, yeah. It's interesting. Maybe the next day against Westmeath is the day to try and settle on that. Whether they want to do it against Waterford and potentially playing Waterford a couple of weeks again after it, is that playing a team at the end of the league and then playing them nearly straight away again, the championship, is always a bit of shadow boxing. But I think at the same time, there'll be a lot of horses for courses. You'll see lads maybe not playing traditional positions. I think Brendan Maher is going to be there either in the half-back line or midfield, and he's going to be picking up the danger man, I think, whether it's Tony Kelly at Clare or whether it's, you know, Joe Canning, if Galway are playing him out there, you know. So I think he'll probably be doing that marking job. So that's him. And Noel kind of is kind of better in the Roman role. I was just from a personal thing, it was great to see Noel play so well yesterday, because there's been a couple of questions about Noel since the back end of last year or whatever, but his pass for the goal was just sublime. He got his own goal, a couple of points himself. So, you know,
I'm giving Noel McGrath and John McGrath to a certain extent a free pass on last year. I think their club, as you well know, obviously been a lot more, man. The club schedule that they had last year was phenomenal, getting to the two finals. Losing the two finals must have taken so much out of him. And then obviously
just psychologically,
yeah. And then the weather is not a Noel McGrath type. Was not a Noel McGrath type
no, funny enough, I wouldn't say that the weather would be as much of an excuse maybe for John. John, he's a skillful hurler in the country, but he's a bit more agricultural maybe than Noel. I mean that in the most positive way that can be taken. I love to see John McGrath isolated on a fullback on the edge of the square, because I'd back him 9 times out of 10 to win that tussle. To be honest, for me, both of them have enough credit in the bank to be given the chance to play themselves out of a bit of bad form in the way. Maybe it's harder to do that for some of the younger lads who maybe aren't putting their hand up as such. But John does need to rediscover his form. There was a few flashes now against Cork, and there was a few flashes yesterday. I think he was involved in the setup for Noel's goal, and I think he assisted another point as well. He just needs to, I think once he gets his head around it or whatever and he finds form, he'll be flying it again.
Yeah, I suppose the forwards are a small bit of a concern, Marissa. We're finding backmen that look like they're capable of coming in. None of the forwards seem to be putting their hands up and saying, pick me. They seem to be playing themselves out of contention rather than into contention.
Yeah, it's not something I'd be overly concerned about yet. I mean, you have Jason Forge as a certain starter. Bubbles looks like an absolute starter for Championship at the moment. I'd be putting Noel in there as well. The rest of them, Dan McCormack, Niall O'Mara, Jake Morris, John McGrath even, they probably have, a bit more work to do, but I suppose it's a good complaint in the end of the day. You have Seamus Callanan coming back. I know we're missing Bonner now, but with Seamus Callanan coming back, it does create more options for Liam Sheedy. I'm sure Westmead will throw up a different sort of challenge that will show. But just to piggyback on what Marty said there about John McGrath, I mean, I definitely think his best position is one-on-one with the fullback on the edge of the square. Having seen him play for UL, especially in 2018 when they won Fitzgibbon, himself and Jason Ford just had a magic link-up for UL that year. And I think, I can't remember the final goal tally, but it was certainly impressive. And they were just constantly feeding off each other. And I think that's just been lacking a bit for Tipperary, but it's they definitely have that connection there. And I would love to see if John starts full forward and just see what he can do there. Is he a starter right now? No, I don't think so.
He's a nailed on starter for me. Seamus Callanan, I think, comes straight back in as well.
It cannot be understated the influence Seamus Callanan has in that forward line.
Yeah.
Just the movement that he brings, the leadership, the work rate, it just everybody performs better with Jamie on the field. So,
The space he creates, I suppose, around him, and because he needs watching himself, he creates space for the other guys.
I think at the minute John's pace is probably missing a little bit. It caught him out a few times yesterday. Look, we all know what John McGrath can do. He's as magic as his brother, and I would have no begrudgings of putting him in the starting team, but I just think based on the last two games, it's not justified, not for a Championship as of yet. Mm-hmm. A lot can change in the last two matches.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think there is a case too of where the training is quite tough at the moment, and we have seen guys flagging, especially kind of coming in, and they're obviously not... They're not tapering off as they're coming into games. They're probably training as hard as they would.
We're three matches on the bounce after just 3 weeks of training. That can't be understated. Fatigue must be very high at the moment. It'd be great for them just to get this week's break now and come back against a team like Westmeath and just see where you're at regroup and then head into the Waterford Challenge.
Yeah, at this point, Marty, we have a chance of winning the league, or certainly topping our group and being joint winners of the league. We need Cork to get beaten, but that Westmeath game is another. We're going to get 2 points out of that. Do you stick? We need Jake Morris, I think, to start and have a good run of form. In that, Dylan Quirk, does he get another start that day?
I'd give Dylan Quirk another go. I was very disappointed with him yesterday. I thought he was largely anonymous, especially he's wearing a red helmet there, so he should stick out. But I'm afraid he didn't, and it was very disappointing. But he's still young. He has bulked up a lot. I definitely would give him another go. I don't think there's anything to be lost by giving him a go. Because I can't see him as a championship starter this year. Bar he starts knocking in hat-tricks in the next couple of league games. But you want him to have the confidence that if he comes on in a championship game that you'll get the, you know, like what Bill did or what Michael Breen did yesterday, and get the point or two. Paul Flynn is a great example of a lad. Again, I'm not sure Paul Flynn is a starter for Tip, but when he comes on, he generally gets a couple of goals and he'll get you a point or two. And that's what we need. You know, we need the three or four lads to come on in the forwards towards the end of the game to get you that score or two. And they need the game time in the league, I think, to get that confidence and get that. So I think if you drop him, it knocks his confidence. And then, you know, might take him a while to rediscover that. So I'd start him against Westmead. I'd start Jake against Westmead, and I'd probably start John as well. And, like, play themselves on or off the team. Simple as that. Like,
give Jason Ford a rest against Westmead.
If Shamie's back, yes. If Shamie's back, I would. Just because you know what you're getting from Jason. So, yeah, I don't think there's any need for anybody to play five games in the league anyway.
Yeah. So I think we'll probably, maybe. Cathal Barrett and Barry Heffernan have played every minute so far, I think. And they probably deserve a rest against Westmead. Owen Connolly has been on the bench. James Quigley have been on the bench for the last two games anyway. They should probably get a run out against Westmead.
James Quigley has been, he's probably been the standout fullback in club hurling for the last number of years. So I think it would be worth giving him a shot. He does tend to foul a lot, which he might not get away with at inter-county level the way he does at club, but he's definitely worth giving a look at. Owen Connolly is definitely a player for the future. He'd been very impressive with Cashel club club-wise. Brendan probably should get a start the next day because he hasn't started yet, and he's to get minutes in the legs as well. I wouldn't be making wholesale changes just for the fun of it. You don't want to. There's no point giving lads chances if they're in with seven or eight other lads looking to get a chance too, because then you don't really get a proper sense of it. But Paddy at fullback, I'd probably persist with that. Two cornerbacks probably could do with the break, all right. Robert Byrne is worth another go at wing back. As you said, he did foul a lot for me, but the same time, to be fair to him, it was his first start, as you were saying, and that could be nerves. And that's something that can be worked on. You know, he wasn't getting turned badly or getting caught out or anything like that. So there's promise there for sure. Seamus Kennedy is another lad, could probably get the break. Ronan is a kind of fella. I don't know. Ronan should play any day he's fit. We need to sort out that middle of the field, but beyond that, then I don't know. I've kind of been against loads of changes, and maybe I've just advocated for a load, but Jake, Dylan, John, that's three year forwards to start. Shamie will probably come back into that. Noel should probably stay there, all right. Dan was disappointing. Wouldn't mind seeing Dan get. Maybe Dan was just tired, I don't know, but don't think another game do him any harm anyway. So
So yeah, that Westmeath game is obviously just 2 weeks, I think it is, up in Westmeath. To finish off with yesterday's game, Marissa Marty did his player ratings there on the PremierViewPodcast.com. He gave the man of the match, as did TG4 to Cathal Barrett. Marty was advocating, I think, maybe using his bias and looking for Noel McGrath to get man of the match on Twitter, but came to his senses and gave it to Cathal in the match ratings. But Cathal Barrett was by far the best tip player on the field.
He was by far the best. And, you know, I don't know if I would give him the 10 out of 10, but, he definitely was the best player. I thought followed very quickly by Barry Heffernan. Mm-hmm. I know I've said it already, so I won't go back, but I was really impressed with him. And yeah, you know, Noel was involved in a couple of things, probably had a few wayward shots. But I would overall agree. I don't know if I would have rated Noel higher than Barry, but, you know, maybe we should all have a say in this next time.
Well, I did put it into the WhatsApp and said I was happy for changes to be made. I will hold my hand up and say that I will be biased when it comes to...
Yeah, just for the record, if a Cap White man ever makes it onto the county team, they're getting 10 out of 10 every time they play. So you're all right, my book, Marty.
Bring back Tomas Costello.
Yeah, very good. No, that was it. So obviously we won 2-19 to 20, and it sets us up for the final two rounds in 2 weeks' time.
Merchmonster.ie.
Don't forget to rate, review and follow us on Spotify and SoundCloud and all our social media platforms. Premier View Podcast on Facebook and Instagram and at Premier View Pod on Twitter. And tip over to our website and subscribe for updates at thepremierviewpodcast.com. But earlier on, I sat down in the PV Pod headquarters with Cathal MacAirlane of Owen Rua GA Club in Tyrone. Okay, Cathal MacAirlane of Fantasy GA, you're very welcome to the Premier View.
Good morning, Mike. Good to be here.
That's good stuff. So you're the man behind fantasyhurling.ie, fantasygaelicfootball.ie. I presume it started out as a fundraiser, probably still is, but has taken on a life of its own over the last number of years, I think.
It has now, thank God. It's basically it's a fundraiser for our club, for basically to raise funds for the youth developing the hurling in our club here in the Glen. Started about 10 years ago. Just a bit of interest in fantasy football and stuff. We did through the sort of club members, emails, wrote down their team and put a paper, bit of crack more or less. And then it developed then and sent out emails to maybe clubs that were connected with down around Tip and Wexford and Cork and different places, Limerick and all. And then we'll get a few more extras in, and then we'll get a few inter-county boys. Like Joe Canning was one of our first celebrity champions. And it just sort of spiraled from there. Thankfully, in our club, we had a parent of a couple of our kids who was big into web design and such, or developing websites. And he basically then created the website that we didn't have to go through the email. It was more or less everybody clicked on and be able to add it to your players and be able to get the transfer systems and stuff sorted. So it really took a new lease of life once we were able to click on a website and people were able to register through there. And then obviously the amount of inter-counties players, especially in the league, obviously it's difficult for them to enter the championship because they're involved, but a lot of them enter the league, like Austin Gleason, basically, I guess, Super, Keane, Lynn Star, Fitzgibbon, I could name a pile of boys. And then former stars, like so your own Tipper, Eamon, Shane McGrath's in this year again. You have Addy Brennan, Jackie Terrell. Dalo's the main one, probably. There was a pile of, I probably shouldn't be naming men because there's so many of them. And they're really driving that on because they're having a bit of crack among themselves. So it's talking to you at least life now. It's great.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned Dalo there. Their podcast is obviously going very well. And Larry Ryan and Dalo have a good old banter on Twitter there. Larry Ryan, of course, a Temple Derry man. But they have a good old banter on Twitter about it. That must really promote your product.
Yeah, to be honest, they probably, and again, like yourselves getting involved in the championship, and there's a lot of podcasts involved, but the Dalos won last year now. They probably sectioned off about 10 minutes each podcast to slag for Mark Launders from Cork. Yeah. Of course, your own tip man, Laurie Ryan, he's the bragging rights over Otney Daly, and Derek McGrath and Brian Hogan, all them crews. So TJ Ryan, Limerick, obviously TJ's great crack and all. So it's definitely added a new dimension to the games because everybody feels like they're part of it then, you know. So they're really playing against them. So yeah, it's great.
So the fundraiser, your own club is Owen Rua there from Dungannon. It's a fundraiser for yourselves. You have a lovely new clubhouse up there. I was looking at it this morning online. It looks fantastic. You were senior champions in Tyrone in 18 and 19, lost the title to Carrickmore last year, but you're doing great work there in Tyrone at the moment.
Yeah, but us and Carrickmore are sort of the two main senior clubs here in Tyrone, and sort of they win one and we win one and so on and so forth. They have probably a bit more success recently now than before. But we are hurling only club here in Tyrone, which is I'm sure surprising to next year's half and tip. But we're driving on at youth and we're traveling all over Ireland. We're going 75 years. Thankfully, the likes of the Fancy Hurling Money has helped develop towards the likes of change rooms, and with floodlights and new pitch and community walkways, probably the best thing we've ever done. The amount of people in through the doors that maybe aren't connected to GA hurling or football, you know, and then all of a sudden they have kids involved, and the numbers are great now, and we're flying it, you know. So it's really good.
Yeah, Tyrone obviously would be known as a football county, a very successful football county. You're a club surrounded by football clubs, I believe, up there. Is it hard to get people involved in hurling, or is it tricky because football is so popular?
I think here in Dungannon, I'm sure Carrickmore is the same, and Nathcom Kill, Oma, you have wee pockets of hurling clubs, you know, and they probably would find it difficult in relation to lads. No, obviously football's the main thing up here, but there's very, very passionate people about hurling too, as much passionate as anybody in Tip or Kilkenny or Cork, and then to be fair, they're driving all these clubs on with maybe 7 or 8 clubs, maybe at under 8, under 10 age group, you know, Bamburb and Tullochogue and Ballygally have a team now too. So there's pockets of underage hurling coming from different sort of areas now, which hopefully will gain momentum and we'll get more hurling clubs up here. But it is tough now with football, but we keep flying the flag, you know.
Yeah, and this year you have, I suppose, we would consider it a coup down here. You have Terence McNaughton in charge of your senior hurling team. He's obviously well-renowned in hurling-wise and all-star. That's a great coup for the club to get in a manager of his calibre.
Yeah, absolutely. Sambo's a great man to be involved. With the county on at the minute, it's difficult because we obviously have the split season and stuff, so he hasn't really got a chance to see our lads. But things are going well. He speaks, you listen. He takes a lot of respect with him. And we knew him probably from years ago. We'd come down the odd time to dinner dances and did an odd coaching session here and there with Andres and all. So we'd know him quite well, and we had a good connection with the Cushendall very old club in Otherham. Actually big in the fantasy too, so they've won the club comp a few times. So it's great to have Sambo Terence involved now, you know.
Yeah, and there's obviously a big Antrim connection in Tyrone hurling. Cormac Donnelly is involved with the Erol club, and I think you have the manager of your own county team is Mikey McShane. So you're obviously looking towards Antrim to give you a help out.
Yeah, to be fair, all the Ulster counties, say there's a lot of passionate hurling people. So if you ever need help from anybody, whether it be in Down, Derry, Fermanagh, Armagh, whatever it is, Monaghan, you know. So if you ever need help, to be fair, hurling people are all very generous in their voluntary activity, you know. And obviously Mickey McShane's involved with Tyrone Seniors. It's great to have him involved. He's obviously renowned for bringing Slap Neil to so close to All Ireland Club. So it's great to have the boys that got involved, and the same in the different clubs here. They've usually somebody from outside the county in coaching or whatever, you know, same with Nathan Kiel, same as Oma, Staban, whatever, you know. So it's great that people are willing to give their time to help out the hurling clubs here in Tyrone, like, you know. So
yeah, so Tyrone as a county, they play in the Nicky Rappert Cup. Damien Casey, your own club man, is one of the main men for Tyrone, beaten in two semi-finals, I think, over the la- last couple of years. Probably looking to push on maybe this year and try and win the title.
I would say yes, definitely, especially with Mickey McShane involved. We have a lot of good young lads from our club, and same with Kirk Moore, and probably injecting a new lease life into Tyrone. I'm actually involved with Monaghan. So Tyrone beat Monaghan last week. Again, you know, you've heard about Damien. Damien's class X. So they've a good chance, they have a good life now in the Nicky record. It'll be tough, the likes of Armagh and stuff, be hard to beat, but thrown probably 10 years ago, we're winning Nicky records sort of regularly and Laurie Mars and stuff. So probably this new lease of life, hopefully the couple of young lads coming through will hopefully bring them to the next level again. And they definitely would stand a good chance to win the Nicky record, please God.
Yeah. So you mentioned there that you have a pretty thriving board and old club in Owen Rua. You have good connections in Tipperary. I believe you make an annual trip to Mullinahone.
We do, down to Jack Kennedy and the boys. So one of our members, Eamon Davin, made the connection maybe 10 years ago now, and we've been travelling to their hurling festival every year. Unfortunately, it wasn't on last year because of the pandemic, but hopefully that's maybe back on this year, maybe next year. I don't know what the crack is yet, but basically they have an under-12 tournament, and the likes of Napierschick and Limerick and Kilkenny, Danesford, and a pile of different clubs from all over Ireland go to it, and we're very blessed, along with a couple of Ulster clubs, Ross and St John's and Dungiven won a few times, all travelling around it. So it's great to be involved in an annual tournament of that where we can go away and our parents, basically that's their summer holidays, they book their holidays, book the hotels in Kilkenny City and stuff.
To mind the own.
Yeah, so that's their summer holidays if you're again hurling person.
We have a South Tip man on this podcast, and if you heard that the people from the north were coming on holidays to South Tip, we'd all be shocked.
You have to priority. Years ago, people in the north would have booked their holidays around the 12th to get away, and now with the modern sort of society, people can take holidays here and there and everywhere. It's a bit of a nightmare from a coaching point of view because you jolly so many ways. So we have our parents now to prefer to them. We have them all trained now. They book them all the home weekend, usually the last weekend in August. Yeah. That's your summer holidays. To be fair, I'm joking about that, but a lot of them do go there for the weekend and then maybe go on down to staying to Kenny for a week or going to down to Tip or North South Tip or whatever, or down to Clare, Kerry and all. So to be fair, they do plan their holidays to give them credit for it. So, but it's a great weekend with connections with Alexa. McCarkey Boris, would stay in Kilkenny, Kilkesh, Silvermine stayed with us in the Fila. We've been down in Thurles, Sarsfields, and Paddy McCormick a few times. Great man, great hurling man. Absolutely. So I have plenty of hurling. I know a few lads from Kildangan. So I have plenty of Tip connects now.
Yeah, that's excellent. Thanks very much, Cathal, for joining us on the Premier View. We wish Owen Rua all the best and Tyrone in 2021. And we'll be with you for the championship for our own mini league in fantasyhurling.ie.
Great stuff, Mick, and thanks for having me on.
No bother.
Hope you enjoy the format.
Come on.
Searchmonster.ie. Okay, let's move on to the final part of this week's podcast. In that, Mike McCarthy chats to John O'Shea. John O'Shea currently resides in Birmingham in the UK, in the county of Warwickshire. John O and Mike discuss how the All Britain Championship works, what it's like to hurl abroad and to hurl in the UK, and the sense of community you have from being involved in a club in the UK. John O also talks about the foundations of John Mitchell's club in Birmingham, and they discuss briefly as well about John O's time in charge or involved with the Warwickshire County team. John O provides a little bit of 6 degrees of separation to some of our most recent guests. Back in the early 2000s, John O replaced Damien Young as the GA officer in Waterford IT. That was at a time when Waterford IT were competing for Fitzgibbon Cup titles on a near annual basis. And John O'Shea played a key role during that time in developing that GA club in the college, as did Damien Young. If you have not heard that Damien Young interview with Mike yet, you need to take 2 hours out of your day. You need to go listen to that podcast. I guarantee you it is the best hurling podcast or hurling interview you're going to hear this year. The knowledge from Damien is, it's nothing short of extraordinary. Go and listen to it. As well as having a connection to Damien Young, Jono also coached a very recent guest back in 2005-2006 as well. That guest is Stone Cold Philly Austin. We had Philip Austin on the podcast recently chatting about all things Tipperary football just after his announcing his recent retirement. Jono coached him to an All-Ireland title back in 2005-2006 in Waterford IT as well. Okay, so let's get on to the interview. Over to you, Mike.
Okay, we're delighted to be joined on the Premier Review this week by John O'Shea of John Mitchell's Warwickshire GA in Birmingham. You're very welcome, John.
Thanks very much, Mike. Great to be on.
So, John, look, straight into it. What took you over to the UK and how did you get involved in the GA over there?
Well, I went over in September 2010, actually the day after Tip won the All-Ireland, to start teaching, do my teaching degree in Bangor in North Wales. So, When I was there, there was about 15 or 16 Irish lads who played GAA. So we played Gaelic football and won actually a British Championships with Bangor, which was, I think, the first time the university had done that, which was great. Like, it was just a combination of lads from all over the country, and we had a couple of English lads who took up the game that year just for something to do. So we had a guy called Keith Begley, who's done a lot of work with Offaly teams down through the years, Clareman originally. He just happened to be over doing a master's in sports psychology, and he decided to take the team, and that was like that kind of made it, and that was a great year. And then towards the end of that year, obviously I was qualifying as a primary school teacher and needed to do my NQT year in England or Wales somewhere. So I started applying for jobs, and applied for a couple of jobs in Birmingham on the off chance, because I was just kind of picking areas. So like, applied for a lot of jobs in Manchester, Cardiff, Leeds, Birmingham, just the main cities, and got an interview in a Catholic school in Birmingham. And that was July 2011, and 10 years later I'm still in the same school and down in Birmingham.
Very good. Hey, what's the GA scene like there, and how did you get involved in it?
So the GA scene in Birmingham, it's part of like Warwickshire County, but Warwickshire County is not the traditional kind of say county of Warwickshire that the council say. It's a mixture of, you've got Birmingham, you've got Wolverhampton, it goes as far north as Nottingham, you've got Leicester, you've got teams in Northampton, you've got teams in Corby, which is further on from Northampton. So there's around 14 clubs in Warwickshire, and about four of them play hurling. So it's, as a Gaelic football county, it's well established, and teams are well established, and they've got well established underage structures. Hurling has kind of fluctuated depending on like a number of factors, like people coming over and that. So how I got involved with John Mitchell's was actually going back to Bangor. We were, Six Nations was on, and we were in our local pub, and one of the girls I was doing my PGC with was from Barnsley, and she said, "Oh, my friend is up for the weekend, and her boyfriend is Irish." And I was like, "Oh, grand, that's, you know, fair enough." So he came to the pub, got chatting to him, he's from Latton, James Dwyer from Latton, and just kind of got talking. And he said, "Oh, we're living in Birmingham, whatever." So then got the job, and I was like, "Right, I'm gonna play GA." So I said, I'll look up James. So I gave James a text, and I was like, "I'm after moving to Birmingham, who do you play with? All right, to come out training, whatever." And he said, "Yeah, no bother." And that was with John Mitchell. So he brought me out to my first training session out in Partenhearn, which is the county grounds. At the time, we were using that as for our training and matches. And yeah, that's how I got involved. A Latin man got me involved.
Very good. Keep Westlands all sticking together. So can you explain the various championships you have over there and how they're structured?
Yeah, so football is, you've got senior, reserve, and then junior. So the reserve is for second teams. And they restructured that in the last couple of years. So the senior championship in football is two groups of four, and then they play each other, and then they've got semi-finals and finals. And that's generally between John Mitchell's, Sean McDermott's have won, I think, 14 out of the last 15. Then you've got Roger Casemans of Coventry and Nate Porrig of Leicester. They're generally the four strongest teams in the last couple of years. And before, you had St. Barnabas from Nottingham were in there. And then you've got your reserve championship, which is second teams, and then you've got your junior, which is in the league, kind of Division 2, Division 3 teams. So they are, to be fair, they're very competitive in football. There's nothing really between the teams. You've got those top four and senior who are kind of head and shoulders above the rest, but on any given day, the other teams can beat anyone else. In hurling, it's different. There's been, in the 10 years since I've been over, the championship structure has changed quite a lot. So when I first played, it was two semi-finals and a final. And at that time, we had Full and Gales from Manchester involved because there was no hurling in Lancashire. So they were involved. But then a team in Liverpool started up, and Yorkshire Emeralds in Leeds, they formed the Lancashire Championship. So then it was ourselves, Barnabas, Aaron Gabra in Erdington, Roger Casements in Coventry. And again, it was that kind of four teams. And then for a while, we had a team called St. Declan's, who were based out of Oxford, I think. And they have since amalgamated into London. Generally, what happens is the winner of the Warwickshire Championship goes into the All-Britain Championship. In the last couple of years, you've had ourselves, the winners of Lancashire, who are generally Full and Gales, and then the London Intermediate Champions. And you play a semi-final and then a final. Now, that's determined by the previous year's All-Britain champion. So if, for example, if we won the All-Britain, we'd be into the final the following year. And then the other two teams play off in the semi-final. And that's generally played at the end of the year. A couple of years ago, the Britain GA, they decided to trial an All-Britain championship that was separate to the county championships, where you had a group of seven. So there was ourselves, Full and Gale, St. Declan's, and then four of the intermediate teams. So the intermediate teams in London who weren't second teams. And then we played each other, and then the top four went to a semi-final and then played off. And that was really good. We got loads of games, but because of travel and different things and clashes with the London Championship especially, it didn't kind of continue, which is a shame. But we've played lots of matches in London as like through the All Britain, and like we are currently All Britain champions because it wasn't played last year. So when you win the All Britain, you go into the All Ireland series at junior level. And traditionally it would rotate around. So you'd play one year you play Connacht, another year you play Ulster, another year you play Leinster, and then that would rotate between home and away. So you do 3 years, the All Britain winners would play at home, and then the next, 4 years because Munster, and then the next 4 years, the All Britain team would play away. But again, they've tweaked it in the last couple of years so that the winners of Britain play the winners of Ulster in what's called, a bridging final. So we played the first of them, 2019, when we played Owen Rua from Derry. So it's a good standard once you kind of progress. Full and Gales got to an All Ireland Junior Final, I think, nearly 10 years ago now. But no British team has won the junior. But I think a London team has won the intermediate.
Right, and is it hard to keep players there, or is there a high turnover of players?
Massively high turnover. Like, so when I arrived, there was I think six of us arrived the same year, and all of them are gone. They've all moved back to Ireland. But it's very transient, like similar to what Fergal said last week in Australia. Like, lads are just constantly moving. COVID has obviously had an impact across Britain with GAA, like, but definitely with us with hurling, because naturally the pool of hurlers in Ireland is relatively small. So you can imagine over here. So like the last couple of years, we've lost three or four, five lads, and not many have come in. Whereas before, you'd always have a steady turnover. Like if you'd lose four, you might get five in, or you might get four in. So you're constantly trying to pick up lads, and you're constantly trying to find out what lads are doing. It helps that we've got three universities in Birmingham, because a lot of lads come over to do physio. So we can kind of nab them there, or obviously construction involving the club. We've got a couple of big companies, so there's always kind of work floating around for lads. But yeah, turnover is quite high, and in the last 12 months especially, we've seen a lot of lads go home because there was no games until I think September last year, whereas at home you had the games in June and July. So a lot of lads decided, I'll go home.
Yeah. So I saw back in 2018, you had an under-16 team that won an All-Britain championship. So would many of them have been, I suppose, children of Irish people, or do you get many natives, English people playing the game, and is there much of an outreach program to get them involved?
So in the club, John Mitchell is interesting because the hurling side of it joined up with the football side in 2019 before. So originally when the club was formed, it was all the one, and then a split happened, I think, in the 70s or 80s. I'm not entirely sure the ins and outs of it, but it was when I joined Mitchell's, it was a hurling club and then you had the football club. It made sense in 2019 to join because the lads who played football with Mitchell generally heard about Mitchell's and vice versa. And we all drank in the same pub, and you know, so it made sense. But originally we were a hurling club, and the underage was actually started in the hurling in the early 90s to kind of revive the club. And the likes of Anne Healy, Frank Healy, who else was there? Billy Collins, who the All Britain Trophy is actually named after, and his son is current Warwickshire chairman. They kind of set about reviving the club, and actually that underage team went across to Ireland in the 90s to play in the Féile. So from 93 to 97, I think, they represented Warwickshire in the Féile with a couple of players from Aaron Gabran, things like that. And they were the backbone of the hurling club in the early 2000s that won three in a row All Britons. Eamon Mahoney from Clonakilty actually managed those teams, and they represented Warwickshire. So they kind of drove it on. And like Matthew Macklin would have played underage with Mitchell's and would have been on those Féile teams. So like the Healy's, the Bruffs, Sean Nash, lads of that, who then played with Mitchell's and are now giving back into the underage. So that kind of fell away a bit on the hurling side. And then after the Laurie Marwin in 2017, it was decided to revive it. And that's going from strength to strength. Bruffy, Chris is involved. They get about 45 kids between under 7 and under 17. And then on the football side, has been long established. And that's the one thing I'll say about Warwickshire as a whole is underage football is very strong in Warwickshire. They've got, if you go out to Parton Heron, obviously pre-COVID, if you went out to Parton Heron any Saturday, you just have blitzes going on all day. And then during the summer, you've got Tuesdays and Thursdays, you've got underage games going on. So I think on the Tuesdays, the 12s and 14s, and then on Thursdays, the 16s and the minors. And in Mitchell's underage, I think they're getting between 150 and 180 out every week. Most of them would be either sons and daughters of Irish or grandsons and granddaughters. But the football, because it's so well established, we've got links with primary schools, we've got links with St. Peter's and Solihull. So we are getting a few who would have no Irish background, just they've played it in school, their friends are playing it, and they're coming out. And we've got we're lucky in that we've got a focal point. We've just recently bought our own pitch. So we've got that area, and we use St. Peter's and Solihull. They've been brilliant with us over for years. So we've got those little focal points, and it helps then that obviously you've got the parents who are either Irish or second generation, and they're driving it as well. So yeah, like we are on the football side, we get a far more kind of English. But it's interesting when you talk to the kid, like I talk to kids in school and I show them GA every year, like, because a new group, they're far more interested in hurling because it's just something completely unique. Whereas Gaelic football looks like rugby league, mm-hmm. looks like rugby union. But you get a lot of English lads who play Gaelic football and they've come from a rugby background.
Yeah, and they're able to pick it up quick enough, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're fit, they're strong. You just, you know, you can get them to hand pass it.
So what's the would say, you mentioned we spoke to Fergal O'Reilly in Melbourne, and obviously they're a good bit behind you. You've bought your own field that you have now, but what's your long-term goal with the club? Is it to compete at a higher level and not have that transient nature of relying on Irish guys who are travelling over and that to try and get an English population playing the game? Is that the goal, or are you happy enough to keep going?
On the hurling side, we're definitely looking to bring through the young lads. Like we've got six of them, six of last year's under 17s training with us now. And there's a couple of them who won't be far off the team this year. They're hardy enough. The problem with hurling over here is at a young age, they need to be doing it the whole time, even more so than at home, but we're always competing with different sports. The football side has a good flow of lads coming through the club from say, English-born lads either who are natives or have Irish family. And that's always been the way with Mitchell's. And actually, with Warwickshire, like if you look at the main clubs in Warwickshire, like Sean McDermott's have probably now, probably 85% of their team is English born. St. Brendan's the same, Casement's a little bit lower, but again they're bringing them through. So like on the football side, Warwickshire is well set up for that kind of conveyor belt, and they've got at a county level at underage they've got a good system. They go over, they play in the Fail every year. There's a gang, I think they're the under-12s, they play before a game in the Leinster Championship every year. So they've got good contacts and good and a good system. So I suppose from the hurling side, is just trying to replicate that and try, similar to in the 90s when the Bruffs, the Nashes, the Healy's and all came through, it's kind of get that again and kind of have that kind of ownership, because it's tough to kind of build a team when you're getting 6-7 lads going every year and you're bringing in lads, and it's quite transient. So that's the long term aim. But in football we have that kind of thing. Like I think on our senior football side there's just 5 or 6 lads who are English born who are like the backbone of the team and have been there for years. So we've got a good history on the football side of bringing lads through. It's just trying to replicate that on the hurling side.
Yeah. And does being away from home but involved in the GA, does that make you feel closer to home? Definitely.
It's like where I am in Birmingham is a bit away from like where the Irish kind of are now. Like so, the club will be based in Hawgreen and Shirley, and I'm over the other side of the city. So it's great going out training, going out with the lads, and just kind of catching up and watching the games together. I mean, I'll be honest, I'm not too far away from the GAA with my dad. He's constantly keeping me updated, as you well know. But it is great, like, and it's great as well, kind of mixing with lads from different counties and kind of getting to know how their counties are getting on and different things like that. So it does bring us together. And as one of the lads once said, when you join a GAA club in Britain or America, wherever, straight away you've got 16, 17 friends, because you know we're all in it together. Like
everyone's in the same boat. Yeah. So do expats, or as you mentioned, second generation, do they bring their children to train and have a feeling of being Irish, being close to their Irish heritage?
At the minute, the way training is working, we train just after the juveniles on the pitch, so like they would be there. And yeah, you would, like at matches and everything, you'd have kids there, and at some training session, yeah, you would. With this kind of new base that we have, new pitch, I think that's just going to develop and just going to become, as I said, more of a focal point and a community point for those families.
So just moving on, you've been a selector with Warwickshire GA in the past, and I've been very unlucky. You lost a record final in 18, a semi-final in 19. And as you said, you won Larry Maher in 17. So can you make that step up, do you think, in going forward?
If you were to ask me in 19, I'd say yes, definitely. Like I got involved in 19 after the 17 and 18. The manager moved on, and Chris Bruff, who I mentioned earlier, he took over. Chris has done everything with Warwickshire. I think he played in their first game in 2003, and now he's managed them, and he won an All-Star back a couple of years ago as well. If you asked me in 19, I'd say definitely we could make a step up. Since then, we've had a few of our big players leave, return home. And then COVID has hit, and that kind of since the 18 season when we lost a good chunk of lads, we were punching above our weight in 2B. Like we pulled off in 2019, we stayed up by beating Donegal in the playoff final, and it was lads who've been involved in Warwickshire said it was one of their sweetest wins, because it came out of nowhere, but we were massive underdogs. Donegal were after beating us heavily the week before, so that was a high point. But yeah, I think post COVID now is going to be tough to kind of bring it on, just because we've lost quite a lot of players, and with everything that's going on, no one is kind of moving over. Whereas before, you'd always, as mentioned, you'd always have lads coming over, and like Brexit as well has probably had an impact on it. Lads thinking twice about moving to the UK. And then the last couple is Dubai is a big draw for lads in construction, whereas before they come to England, now there's so much building going on in Dubai. You've got lads moving to Dubai now. Don't blame them, the weather over there.
yeah, absolutely. So the GAA took the decision earlier on in the year that there'd be no one from the UK or New York playing in the championships this year. That must be very disappointing for the second year in a row not to be able to play in the Irish championships.
To be honest, it is. But they took the decision early, whereas last year we were still humming and hawing. We didn't know for a while. It's like, it's a lot harder over here to get time off work. If you're turning around to your employer and say I need to quarantine for 10 days because I went over and played a match, I don't think they'd look favourably on it. Whereas at home, you know, there is that kind of, the GAA is like that, and there is that kind of leeway. So I think I'm glad they took the decision early.
Yeah. So do you like the structure of the All Ireland Hurling Championships? In the fact that it's different, I suppose, from the football, where every team gets to play for Sam Maguire. The structure with the Laurie Maher, Nicky Record, Christy Ringley, McCarthy. Is that a good structure, do you think? And is it something that football, who have been fighting it, should look at?
I think it's been brilliant for hurling in the so-called weaker counties. Like if you look at Kildare, while Kildare were always kind of strong in the last couple of years, they've come on a ton. Donegal have come on a ton. Armagh as well. Like it gives counties like, I suppose, like Warwickshire, London, and the Longfords and everything, something genuine to aim for, and they play at their level. I would, if I was to change them, I'd make more games available because they've kind of streamlined them a bit more. I'd get them playing more games at the lower levels because that's the only way you can develop is playing matches, and playing matches at your own level and then making that step up. I think. I see no reason why the football can't go that way. The issue would be the promotion of it, because often the lower tour competitions in Ireland aren't really promoted that well. Yes, we got a day in Croke Park, which is brilliant, and it's a great aim.
So before I move on to the quick fire questions, what was your GA career in Ireland like before you went over to the UK?
Uneventful, I'd say. So I started off with Fogs up in Dublin, underage Fogs up in Dublin under Michael Devan from Clonalty. He'd be an uncle of John Devan. So he trained me all the way up. We would have been like the first underage team in the club. So we won an under 16 championship with actually Endo Sullivan, who's involved in football, PRO. He was coach. So I would have played up until under 21 with them and then moved to Anacarty and had a couple of years around Anacarty. We were betting a couple of West Finals in hurling and football, betting a junior final, I think, in my last year. Kind of uneventful. Like highlights would have been hurling with the father for a couple of years, which was interesting at times. you can imagine. But that was quite good now, in fairness. And then playing with Aerog, really enjoyed playing with Aerog. We didn't get over line. Clonalty, that brilliant Clonalty team, about 2 years out of the few years I was there. And then I think Kick comes about us in a junior final as well. It was pretty uneventful, really. Didn't really win much.
Very good. So before I let any of my guests go, I'd like to get them to answer one word questions. So West Senior Hurling Championship winners 2021.
I'm gonna have to say Aerog.
Do the two John O'Shea's get on when Tenoti play Aerog?
It was frosty for a while, yeah. But yeah, I think we're okay now.
Very good. Dan Breen winners 2021.
Ooh, it's hard to look past Killadangan, but I'd love to see Kirawan do it.
Yeah. All Ireland Senior Hurling winners.
I'm gonna say Tip. I actually think this season might suit him better than last season.
Very good. The football.
I'd like to say Kerry, but I think it'll be Dublin again.
UK club championship winners.
If the All Britain goes ahead, I'm going to say John Mitchell's.
Okay. Very good. And is Colm O'Sullivan able to hurl?
So Sully, actually, Coach Sully in college, as he was a goalie as a fresher. And yeah, there was a few times where he was just guessing because he's pretty blind. I remember we played one game and he made a brilliant save. And I was like, that was some save, Sully. So yeah, I just looked at the middle ball.
Very good. John O'Shea, it was a pleasure to have you on the Premier View. Thanks very much.
No problem at all, Michael. Take it easy.
Well, that's all we have time for this week, folks. Thanks again to Cathal and John for joining us and to Marty and Marissa for their contributions. And watch out for our next pod on Thursday afternoon. Tipperdarn aboo.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.